Grace and peace, and welcome to another episode of Quorum Deo. Let's do a quick recap. In part one of this series that I'm doing on depression, joy, and the hope of God, we looked at 1 Kings 19. And let's do a quick summary of 1 Kings 19. So one of the first things you have is Elijah has seen the power of the Lord. That happens in actually in 18 as he is battling against the prophets of Baal. He calls for God to rain down fire on the altar, and God does that. And in that, it demonstrates his power. Also in that, God also demonstrated his sovereignty as he demonstrated before the watching ward, before the prophets of Baal, before Israel, before Elijah, that he is sovereign, over all other false gods, and that he reigns supreme. And then finally, it also demonstrated to Elijah the kingdom advancement purposes of God, that God is going to advance his kingdom, that he is not going to allow false gods or false religion to take over his kingdom, but rather he is going to advance his kingdom as demonstrated in that act as he eliminates the prophets of Baal so that the truth can go forth, the truth of Yahweh. And so we have these events, and then we have immediately afterwards Jezebel saying to Elijah, sending him a message basically saying that I'm going to kill you. And then Elijah's response being one, he doubted the Lord. He believed that he was he doubted the Lord's sovereignty and the Lord's providence. He believed the lie that he was alone, and he believed the lie that God had left him. But we know these things not to be true. For one, we know that Elijah was not alone. We find at the end of chapter 19, God says that there are 7,000 others who have not bowed the knee to Baal. We know that God has not left Elijah alone, because as Elijah flees and is depressed and basically goes to sleep, it is God who actually meets him there. It is God who actually nurtures him in regards to feeds him and gives him water and lets him sleep some more and get some rest, and then feeds him and gives him water again. And so God is actually there not only meeting Elijah's physical needs, but God is actually there also to correct Elijah's false thinking and wrong thinking. And so Elijah was not alone, but Elijah in his unbelief began to believe those lies. Now, God came to care for Elijah, and one of the things that I mentioned here was the fact that when it comes to serving or caring for those who are struggling with depression, there's much to be said in regards to making sure that they are physically taken care of. We are not just spirit beings, we are people, and by definition, humans are those who are both body and spirit. And so because we are both body and spirit, we must take care of our spiritual aspects of us, but we also must care for the physical needs as well. And so when it comes to depression, there can be both spiritual and physical dynamics that are related to depression. As I mentioned in the previous episode, these can be things related to health, they can be things related to exercise, diet, and all those other kinds of things. But then you even get into other physical elements that are even more intricate or more severe. You have people who have various kinds of disorders or issues, like I mentioned myself, being diagnosed bipolar or manic depression, and without even getting into the nuances of that and dealing with the medical aspects of that, there can be physiological reasons that lead someone to being depressed. The two that have actually been documented and proven in many ways is issues related to a thyroid, chemical imbalance in your thyroid, not brain, but in your thyroid, which can easily be fixed with medication. It can be tested for, and then if it does show that there's an imbalance, there's simple medication that you can take that can correct that imbalance. And when that happens, people's emotions are brought back in check, and that can actually in many ways eliminate depression. Another would be the hormone imbalances that can take place after labor and delivery. There's something called postpartum depression, where there can be depression that comes about, and it's not because someone is thinking negatively and not necessarily believing in on the Lord, but it's a matter of physiological issues or biological issues that are causing their emotions to lead them into a state of depression. And those are unique situations, and those are things that we want to take care of. In this text, as you see, God wanting to care for the physical nature of Elijah, and we know in this text that Elijah is depressed because of unbelief. He's not depressed because of any physiological issues, but we do know that even from this text, we can recognize that there is a need to make sure that we are caring for the physical elements that can be related to depression. When it comes to situations, and we'll talk about this more thoroughly and later in this series, of things such as postpartum depression or issues related to a thyroid issue, those are things that biblical counseling is not necessarily going to fix because they're biological, they're physiological. You may need medication of some sort to help those things. And so the goal is not to end depression, or the goal is not to cure depression. The goal is to glorify the Lord. And that is very, very important. Not just in those situations, but in all situations, the goal is not that you will not be depressed. The goal is that you, in every aspect, in every facet of life, are glorifying the Lord. And as you're glorifying the Lord and living in a way that is quorum Deo, is living as in the presence of the Lord and seeking to glorify the Lord, naturally, things that would lead to you being depressed that are not biological or physiological in nature will be eradicated as you are seeking to joyfully to rejoice in the Lord and in His promises. And so that's the goal within situations that are more severe, that are, again, are biological, and it's also the goal even when dealing with spiritual issues. But let's get back to the actual point here, or the actual text that we're looking at here as we're looking at Elijah. And so as we're reading Elijah, and where we kind of stopped at the other day when we were going through this, is we stopped with Elijah and his unbelief, the unbelief that was leading to his depression. And one of the things that I mentioned that that is really helpful to do is to ask yourself the same question that God asked of Elijah in his depression. If we want to be biblical and we know that all scripture is God breathed, then reason says that we should seek to ask ourselves when we are depressed, we should seek to ask ourselves what we know God would ask us in the midst of our depression. And one of the things that we know that God will ask us is, what are you doing here? We've just talked about how some of the answers to that could be, well, I delivered a baby and my hormones are imbalanced and I don't know why I'm here, but I'm here. Or it could be issues related to unbelief and doubt that are bleeding, or anxiety that are actually bringing you there. And as you ask yourself that question, you want to ask yourself the same things that God asked about, that Elijah experienced: the sovereignty of the Lord, the kingdom advancement, and also the power of the Lord. Now, one of the things that is really interesting in this text that we're going to look at right now is how the Lord deals with this. So we just talked about how Elijah doubted the sovereignty, the power of God, the sovereignty of God, and the kingdom advancement of God. And because of his doubting and unbelief in those things, it led him into unbelief and ultimately into a severe depression. And what we want to look at is, how did God care for Elijah in the midst of these things? And let's look at what actually happens here. So first, Elijah feeds and gives him water. He lets him sleep, and then he does it again. And so he makes sure that Elijah's in the right mind, if you would, before engaging with him. And then after Elijah does take care of those basic needs, we then get this here. It says here in verse 9, "There he came to a cave and lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' And Elijah responds, he said, 'I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away.' And then God says to him, 'Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord.'" And so he asked Elijah, what's going on? And you can just hear the unbelief in Elijah's response, you know, that I've been jealous for you, that I've been here proclaiming you, and yet, you know, they've forsaken your covenant, they throw down your altars, they're trying to kill me. You can see the unbelief in Elijah's statement. But what does God do? He tells Elijah to go stand on the mount, and then it says, "The Lord passed by, and a great strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave." And so what you have here is God reminding Elijah of what it is that Elijah just witnessed. Elijah witnessed the power of God and the sovereignty of God just moments before he was threatened. And the moment he was threatened, he forgot what he had just witnessed of the Lord. And so he runs away, and then God comes to him and says, Elijah, why are you here? Now, Elijah's proper response would have been, Lord, I forgot your glory, your power, your sovereignty, and that's why I'm here. But no, Elijah's response is he's still wallowing in his own self-pity. He's not thinking about the power of God or the sovereignty of God or that God's presence is with him. What he is thinking about is how the threats that have come his way. And so what God does is he demonstrates to Elijah again his power. He brings a wind, and this wind breaks a mountain into pieces, mountains into pieces. Just imagine a wind. You're standing there in this strong wind that's not just simply strong enough to blow you over, but a wind that is so powerful that as it hits the mountains, the rocks begin breaking into pieces. And then the whole ground begins to shake. The whole ground, the whole earth begins to shake. It kind of reminds you of Isaiah 6, that when Isaiah beheld the Lord, and he says that the thresholds of the temple shook. And so you have this massive earthquake that's also taking place here, demonstrating again God's power and sovereignty over creation and over nature. And again, and also his power that he can send forth a wind that can break mountains. He can send forth an earthquake that can shatter the earth. But God was in neither of those things. And then finally God comes in a whisper. God comes in his grace. He comes in many ways a soft rebuke. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his faith in his cloak and he went out and stood at the entrance. So God heard Elijah heard the voice of God. He witnessed again these massive demonstrations of God's sovereignty of power. And then God asks him again in this voice, Elijah, what are you doing here? And so another test. God is testing Elijah. He's asking Elijah the same question that he just asked. And in many ways, you can give Elijah the benefit of the doubt. You say, okay, God asked him, Elijah, what are you doing here? And Elijah responds foolishly. And then God demonstrates all his glory. He shows him the mountains splitting. He shows him the earthquakes. He comes and he speaks to him, you know, in the form of a whisper. Surely when God asks him again, what are you doing here? Elijah's finally going to get it, that it's his unbelief. It's his anxiety. It's his not believing in the things that he has seen, the testimonies and promises of the Lord that has gotten him here. But what is it that Elijah says a second time? He says in verse 14, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, throw down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword, and I only am left. And they seek my life to take it away. And so Elijah responds, he does not get it. Elijah does not get it. Instead of now looking at the power and the glory and the sovereignty and the mightiness of the Lord, he still is caught up in his unbelief. And the sad part about this, the tragic part about this, is in verse 15, we see the God's judgment on Elijah for rejecting the belief, for his unbelief. In verse 15, it says, and the Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. And listen, and Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. And so what ended up happening was that because of Elijah's unbelief, despite the fact that God has just redemonstrated his glory, the Lord has chosen to remove the mantle from Elijah, the prophetic mantle from Elijah, and to give it to another. And what he tells Elijah to do is let this person know in verse 17, and the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death, and the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elijah put to death. And so Elijah is fearing for his life, and God is saying, well, I'm going to give your prophetic mantle to someone else, and this person is going to put others to death who are rejecting the word of the Lord. And so you have Elisha being a man who is going to be given the authority that Elijah had, because Elijah in many ways spurned it because of his unbelief. And then at the very end in verse 18, we have God giving the ultimate rebuke. God, he lets Elijah repeat twice that he alone, that only he's the only one. I am left, he says. Again, even I only am left, he says again, and they seek my life. And then in verse 18, he says, "Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." And so after both of those responses, and the judgment of God comes on Elijah, God takes away Elijah's prophetic role, God then reminds Elijah, "Elijah, you have not been alone." And so one of the other things that I want to encourage you to ask yourself is, and this specifically, is how many times, how often has, when you struggled with depression, has your depression kept you from serving in your spiritual gifts? Elijah should be on the front lines as a prophet proclaiming the word of the Lord, especially when everything is so ripe. God just demonstrated a miraculous sign by having fire fall from the altar and demonstrated that he is the living God. And instead of Elijah being there proclaiming the word of the Lord when the hearts of men are sensitive to God as they've just witnessed this miracle, he has fled. And so he is not where he is supposed to be, which is why God asked him the questions, "What are you doing out here in the wilderness?" rather than, again, being on the front lines. So often, our depression, and this is one of the reasons why Satan loves when Christians are depressed, it robs us of our privilege of actually serving the kingdom. And so one of the things I also want to encourage you to is to think about not only what ways have you witnessed the power of the Lord, the sovereignty of the Lord, specifically in your own life, in your own answered prayer, in the own act of your conversion, and various other elements as well. But also ask yourself the question of how many times has your depression caused you or led you to not be able to serve the Lord in the gifts that he has given you? How has it not only deprived you of your own joy, but how has it deprived the church? And when you read these things, when you consider those things, it kind of takes you back to Romans 6 when Paul says that do not let sin have mastery or have dominion over you. You see, depression is one of those things that it's very easy to take mastery or take dominion over you. When we are depressed, we feel debilitated. We feel like we can't do anything but just simply pull the covers overhead and just go to sleep. And one of the things that the Bible says is that and that the Apostle Paul encourages is that do not let sin have dominion over you. That even when depression comes, you can still serve the Lord. You can still serve the Lord with joy even in the midst of depression. And if you allow your depression to actually disable you, if you would, from actually being able to serve, then the response that you are giving in light of your depression is one that is allowing your circumstances, even challenging circumstances, to rob you of glory, to rob you of a joy that should be steadfast in the Lord. And so when we look at the life of Elijah, we look at a life of someone who did not respond rightly to the depression that was brought forth in his life due to his circumstances. And when we look at Elijah, one of the things that we see is we see over and over again in this narrative ways in which opportunities that the Lord had given Elijah to respond rightly. And we see Elijah's failures in this text. But we also see that Elijah's failure was not an ultimate failure. That it was Elijah who was asked, and the next text here, as you look at the call of Elisha, it was Elijah, one of only two individuals apart from Christ, who were actually taken up to glory while they were still alive. You have Enoch in Genesis, and now you have Elijah, who are chariots of fire come and take Elijah away to be with the Lord. And so you still see the God's forgiveness, not only God's forgiveness of Elijah, but you also see God's restoration of Elijah in a couple ways. One, you see God come down, give Elijah a chariot of fire to be brought up to heaven. You also see that the forerunner of the Messiah is one who's going to be in the spirit of Elijah. And so you have that element as well, as when, again, people, when Jesus, who do they say that they am? Many say that some say you're Elijah. That's because there's a prophecy that says that Elijah, the one is going to come in the spirit of Elijah as a forerunner of the Messiah. And so he is the one who is labeled as being the great prophet who John the Baptist basically follows after. And then finally, on the Mount of Transfiguration, who are the three men, the other two men whom Jesus meets with as he is transfigured? It's Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. And so we know that Elijah was reconciled with God. We know that Elijah was forgiven. We know that Elijah, in many ways, was ultimately restored. But we also know that Elijah missed out on tremendous opportunities due to the depression in which he did not battle and did not seek to pursue victory over, but rather continued to walk in unbelief even after the correction of the Lord. Now, what I want to get away from this, and this is a text where we do see an example, in a sense, and a kind of a negative example. We see someone who did not respond rightly to their situation. But we also have various elements here in this text that we are able to take out so that we may know how can we respond in a way that's not like Elijah. How can we look at the life of Elijah and be warned by his life so that we can be sure to respond the way that Elijah should have? What I would like to do in the next episode here that we have in this series is actually look at the life of someone who actually did respond rightly in the midst of their depression. And so next we're going to be going into the Psalms, and we're going to be looking at King David in the Psalms and seeing another example of how someone actually, in a very similar situation to Elijah here, how did they respond that was different, and what was the result of that response? And so join me in the next episode where we look at the life of David as he cries out to the Lord, "How long, O Lord, how long will you hide your face from me?" And we see from King David what it looks like to respond to the depression in faith.